Well, a cynical Unitarian once wrote a carol to the tune of God Rest You Merry Gentlemen. He called it God Rescue Merry Gentlemen. God rest you Unitarians, let nothing you dismay. Remember, there's no evidence there was a Christmas day. When Christ was born, it's just not known, no matter what they say. Glad tidings of reason and fact, glad tidings of reason and fact. We don't applaud at the 11 o'clock service. Control yourselves. Of course, we do not actually know the date that Jesus was born. Still, Unitarian Universalists love to celebrate Christmas. In fact, we have made a major contribution in many ways to the celebration of the holiday. For example, I hope when you look at this Christmas tree, you think immediately of Charles Fallon, the Unitarian minister, who was one of the first persons to bring the German tradition of Christmas trees to America. Charles Fallon was an immigrant from Germany. He was an intellectual, a political liberal who fled Germany when the authorities wanted to imprison him for his political activities. He moved to Cambridge, Massachusetts, where he formed close ties with the liberal Unitarian establishment that dominated Harvard and Boston. He found Unitarianism very compatible with his own progressive Christian ideas. In 1830, 5 years after he arrived in America, Fallon became a Unitarian minister and a United States citizen, and Harvard appointed him to a full-time faculty position. Fallon helped organize the Cambridge Anti-Slavery Society, which was based at Harvard. In November of 1835, a woman from England named Harriet Martineau came to visit. Born in 1802, Harriet Martineau was a prominent English Unitarian intellectual. She was visiting the United States to write a book about our country. She met and quickly befriended Charles Fallon, and he invited her to spend New Year's Eve with him and his family. When Martineau arrived at the Fallon home on December 31st, 1835, Charles and his wife were just adding little wax candles to a Christmas tree. The Fallons had postponed the ritual until New Year's Eve to adopt a Martineau schedule. And this was all new to her. She had never seen a Christmas tree before, having been raised in England and then traveled in the United States, because Christmas trees were a German tradition, not an English tradition. The top of the tree was a top portion of a fir or a spruce. It had been placed in the front drawing room of the house. There were a toy hanging from every branch. As five-year-old Charlie, the fallen son, and two older companions approached the house after being out playing, the adults quickly closed the door to the front drawing room so that the children could not see the tree. They moved into an adjacent room where, as Martineau put it, they sat around trying to look as if nothing was going to happen. After they served the visitors tea and coffee, they played a round of parlor games. The goal was to distract the children's attention from the front drawing room where Charlie's parents were now busily lighting the candles. Finally, they threw open the double doors and the children poured in, their voices instantly hushed. Their faces were upturned to the blaze, all eyes wide open, all their lips parted, all steps arrested. Nobody spoke, only Charlie leaped for joy. After a few moments, the children discovered that the tree bore something edible, and the babble began again. The adults told the children to take what they could from the tree without burning themselves on the candles. Martineau reported that we tall people kept watch and helped them with good things from the higher branches. After the children had eaten their fill of the edibles, the evening continued with dancing and mugs of steamed mulled wine. When she returned to London, Harriet Martineau wrote about Charles Follen's Christmas tree in a widely read book published in 1838, spreading the idea of the Christmas tree in England and in the United States as people read her story about this event. She said in the book that she was present at the introduction into the new country of the German Christmas tree. Now, that wasn't completely true. There had been some in Pennsylvania before this, but this was the beginning of the widespread acceptance of the Christmas tree in American culture. So, next time you look at a Christmas tree, remember that a Unitarian displayed one of the first Christmas trees in America. But that's not all. Helping introduce the Christmas tree to America is not the only contribution of Unitarians to Christmas. A Unitarian is also responsible for one of our most popular Christmas songs. James Pierpoint was born in 1822 while his father served as the Unitarian pastor of the Hollis Street Church in Boston. In 1834, at the age of 10, his parents sent James to a boarding school in New Hampshire. An adventurous child, he wrote his mother a letter about riding in a sleigh through a December snowstorm. In 1836, the 14-year-old James ran away to sea on a ship called the Shark. By 1845, James went back to the East Coast, where his father was the minister of a Unitarian congregation in Troy, New York. In 1849, his father took a position as minister of the Unitarian Church in Medford, Massachusetts. Son James sailed to San Francisco to participate in the California Gold Rush of 1849. He opened a business in San Francisco, but when the store burned down in a fire, James returned to live with Dad back at the parsonage in Medford, Massachusetts. In 1853, James's brother, the Reverend John Pierpoint Jr., accepted a post with the Savannah, Georgia Unitarian Congregation. So James followed his brother and was given a job as the organist and music director of the Savannah, Georgia Unitarian Church. Now, both the Unitarian Church in Medford, Massachusetts, and the Unitarian Church in Savannah, Georgia, claim that they are the location where James wrote what was to become the most popular Christmas song in America. The Medford, Massachusetts Unitarians, according to them, they say that one day in 1851, James Pierpoint went to the home of Mrs. Otis Waterman. She let him play a piano belonging to William Weber, a Medford music teacher. Mrs. Waterman owned a boarding house, which became better known later as the Simpson Tavern, hence the origin of the story that James wrote the song in a tavern. After he played the piece for her, Mrs. Waterman replied that it was a very merry little jingle and he should have much success with it. Pierpoint then wrote lyrics about the one-horse open sleigh that young men raced on in the one-mile route from Medford to the Malden Square. Well, the Unitarians in Savannah, Georgia say, no, none of that happened. They believe he wrote the Christmas Carol in Savannah. They believe that James composed the song because he was homesick for snow and nostalgic for his youthful days in New England. Both the Unitarians in Massachusetts and the Unitarians in Georgia say that James played the carol for the first time at Thanksgiving at a church service in the 1850s. According to the story, the children liked the carol so much that they asked James to repeat it at the Christmas service. However, others, the more sober adults in the congregation, argued that the references in the carol to courting and dancing and racing would not have been acceptable in a church service. So it was probably just a song about fast sleighs and pretty girls. Today in Medford, Massachusetts, and in Savannah, Georgia, there are historic markers commemorating the birthplace of the carol. Wherever James originally wrote it, we do know that he was a Unitarian. Also, we know he copyrighted it in 1857 with the memorable title, One Horse Open Sleigh. So next time you hear, and feel free to join in if you recognize the song, Dashing through the snow in a one-horse open sleigh, o'er the fields we go, laughing all the way. Bells on bobtails ring, making spirits bright. What fun it is to ride and sing a sleighing song tonight. Oh, jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. Hey, jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. Where would Christmas be without Unitarians? Well, that's not all, though. Helping to introduce Christmas, the Christmas tree to Americans, and writing Jingle Bells are not the only Unitarian contributions to Christmas. A third example is a story written by the Englishman, a man named Charles Dickens. Traditional religion disgusted Charles Dickens. He watched clergy engage in intellectual debates about the Bible as children were dying of disease and malnutrition in the slums of London. Dickens said, "I cannot sit under a clergyman who addresses his congregation as though he has taken a return ticket to heaven and back." He detested the practice of teaching poor children to memorize parts of the Bible by rote, and he was delighted with the story of the child who came out with, "Our Savior was the only forgotten son of the Father." In 1842, Dickens traveled to America. He returned home to London full of enthusiasm for the New England Unitarians. After he returned to London, he first attended Unitarian services at Essex Street Chapel and later took a pew at the Little Portland Street Chapel. He liked the chapel's minister, and they remained friends until the minister's death 16 years later. Dickens said, "I have carried into effect an old idea of mine and joined the Unitarians, who would do something for human improvement if they could, and practice charity and toleration." Dickens defined Unitarianism as that religion which has sympathy for men of every creed and ventures to pass judgment on none. In early October 1843, when he was most active at the Portland Street Chapel, Dickens created the first and greatest of his Christmas books, A Christmas Carol. The tale has become one of the most popular and enduring Christmas stories of all time. The story's popularity played a critical role in redefining the importance of charity at Christmas, and the major sentiments associated with the holiday today are due to, in a great deal, to the story he told. So the next time you watch a play or see a movie or hear a reading from the story based on Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol, remember that Dickens was attending a Unitarian church in London, the Little Portland Street Chapel, when he was writing that story. But helping to introduce Christmas trees to Americans, writing Jingle Bells, and writing the story of A Christmas Carol are only some of the Unitarian contributions to Christmas. I have one more this morning. My last example is a carol written by Edmund Hamilton Sears. After briefly studying laws, Sears changed career plans and entered Harvard Divinity School, graduating in 1837. He was ordained to the Unitarian ministry and held four pastorates during his lifetime. He had no ambition to pastor a large or influential city church. He was content instead to serve small congregations in farming communities. Today we remember Sears for his carol, "It Came Upon a Midnight Clear." Some say the carol was first performed by parishioners gathered in his home on Christmas Eve in the 1840s. Another account says he wrote the carol for the Sunday School of the Unitarian Church in Quincy, Massachusetts. "It Came Upon a Midnight Clear" first appeared in print in 1849 in the Unitarian magazine, The Christian Register. The Christian Register's editor, a fellow clergyman, wrote sometime later, "I always feel that however poor my Christmas sermon may be, the reading and the singing of this hymn are enough to make up for all the deficiencies." Sears' song focuses not on Bethlehem, but on his own time and the issues of war and peace. Historians have assumed that it was Sears' response to the just-ending Mexican-American War. Sears' pacifism would take second place to his commitment to abolish slavery in the Civil War, but his carol remains repeated all over the world, sung every year. It says that the call to peace and goodwill to all is as loud on any other day as it was on that midnight of old, if we would but listen in solemn stillness. The carol shows the author's skill at using poetry and imagery, as in "harps of gold, the world in solemn stillness lay," and reference to God as "heaven's all-gracious king." The second stanza is highly descriptive of the angelic choir, while the third and fifth stanzas take on an almost political tone with descriptions and references of a future golden age of peace. Those who suffer injustice are encouraged to hear the angels sing. The carol, by the way, never mentions Jesus. Today we still sing and admire this carol by a Unitarian minister. A scholar has written, "No Christmas is perfect without the singing of this hymn. It is one of the finest ever written, not only because of its melodious rendering of the biblical story of angels and shepherds, but because it is one of the first to emphasize the social significance of the angels' message." So let's close our service today by singing together carol number 244 in our hymnal, "It Came Upon a Midnight Clear."